You lucky expletive, expletive, expletive. Because that was not my experience at all. Oh my gosh. I went to a school where half my friends that were from my house bubble were also my classmates. Oh boy. Hey guys, welcome back to Two Suitcases. This is a show where we unpack immigration stories and explore complex topics that transcend borders and culture. I am Raksha Rajagopalan.
And I am Bharat Madras Natarajan. So, Raksha, we wanted to have this conversation about us growing up in Zambia, and we've wanted to do this on the record for a while now. I know we've had a lot of conversations around this topic. You know, we do tend to reflect, sit down and reflect a lot on our childhood. You know, one of the ideas for this whole podcast kind of came from those types of conversations. You know, a lot of people have asked me over the years, what was growing up in Zambia like? It must be an intriguing topic for folks, obviously, who haven't gone through it, because it is a weird set of circumstances, right, that put us in Zambia as Indians in that particular time and growing up and how that's impacted our lives. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
You can't really see me, that is our listeners, but I'm smiling ear to ear because this is an important topic. I think it has shaped Bharat and I to the people that we are growing up in Zambia. We are the way we are because of the experiences that we had. I'm really excited to just reflect on our childhood, kind of share to the world how special and unique it was for us to grow up in Zambia. This is one of the biggest topics that we were brainstorming before we started this podcast. Finally, it's here. We're here to talk about it, and I am really excited. So, Bharat, you have to tell me, man. I want to know, what was it like for you growing up in Zambia?
You know, growing up in Zambia was, particularly obviously as an Indian in Zambia, was one of those experiences that felt very normal going through it. But, you know, it's years later when you look back at that experience that you kind of appreciate it for what it was. It was one of those things where you were kind of, at least for me, I was in between two different cultures. And two cultures that were somewhat similar, but very different at the same time. Two groups of people, two groups of societies that had different privileges and different experiences going through Zambian society at that point in time. So I felt like when I was growing up, I strongly associated with both being Zambian and being Indian. I grew up in predominantly Zambian schools where most of my classmates were Black Zambian. And there were even times when I was the only Indian in the whole school. So it was a very different experience being in a Zambian school that is in itself a very Zambian and Afrocentric bubble. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would have to come back home. I would be a very Tamil Indian kid. And so growing up was just kind of trying to balance those two different cultures and those two different sets of values and those two different identities altogether. And I had a strong sense of being Zambian because of the kind of education system that I was brought up in too. Because growing up, I learned Zambian history. I learned about the Zambian independence struggle. I learned about Zambian geography and the place of Zambia in the world. I grew a strong sense of pride associated with that kind of education. But at the same time, in high school, I moved to an international school where it was a completely different experience.
Right.
Right. You interact with more people from different backgrounds. You automatically interact with a group of people that already has a certain set of additional privileges than the school that I was coming from. And so that was interesting growing up that way. But one of the other things too is because Zambia is such a small country, one of the things I think about more often now is it being a small country meant that we, at least the groups of people that I associated with and myself, felt that I was always somewhat aware of the different cultures and mm-hmm. different societies around the world, right? I grew up listening to a lot of hip-hop and heavily influenced by American music culture. we went to predominantly British school systems with a British school curriculum. And so we also had a lot of friends who were kind of associated with the UK. We had a lot of friends who had family in South Africa. Zambia, to me, always felt like being in a fishbowl. Not really in the sense that everyone could see you, but you could definitely kind of, you almost had to see what else was going on the world around you. So I think that was a really unique experience. Being in a small society where you felt like you knew almost everyone, you know, at least you'd heard of almost everyone in Lusaka or in Zambia. At the same time, you kind of had to be in tune with what's going on around you. But that also meant that we had a lot more opportunities to go see some of the other countries and places around Southern Africa. We would go on a lot of school trips to Namibia and, you know, to Zimbabwe, and a lot of family trips to all these other Southern African countries, which I thought was a really unique experience. I had an appreciation for it then, and I still obviously have an appreciation for it now.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I really wish my kids could have a similar experience like that, but knowing where my life is headed right now, that's probably not going to happen. And I feel really bad because that was a really precious and valuable part of growing up for me. Being able to do all those things, being able to balance between different cultures and different societies. So that's kind of what my childhood was like. But how about you?
You know, I thought about this a lot, and I think I appreciated Zambia more when I left it. I'm so grateful for growing up in Zambia, and I think I'm a storyteller. I like to tell a story, and leaving that place made me reflect more on why I love it. My childhood was pretty normal in terms of I had to balance between having Indian parents and going to an international school. Like you said, so I never really went to a Zambian school. I went to an international school where I had Zambian friends. I had friends that were from various different backgrounds, and I also had a lot of Indian friends. One of my special things about growing up in Zambia is somehow I felt that I really appreciated Zambians a lot because I learned from their way of life in terms of kindness and in general how friendly they are. And then I come back home and then we have all this Indian life that we're going to all these pujas and, you know, having all these cultural activities that I was doing with my friends. So it was such a good balance of cultures that I was put in such a young age that I really appreciate that I had that experience. And I loved how my eyes were always outside of Zambia. So in a weird way, I was so aware that Zambia really is just my little stepping stone. From here, I am going to move out of here. And so I was really conscious of all the other cultures that I was exposed to. Oh, how would it be going to the US? Or, wow, that's what happens in South Africa. And again, we came from such a privileged life that we were able to travel to all these different places to know what it was like that was not in Zambia. In Zambia itself, I loved having that, we kind of escaped to the countryside and we're able to go on a safari, and people pay thousands and thousands of dollars to be able to do that now.
Right.
There it was. We were able to go and enjoy our holidays. And I feel like how blessed I was to have this kind of opportunity. You know, I think my parents really insisted on having Indian cultural experience too. And that was really pushed. So for me, it was, I would go to school. I would take part in all of these, having teachers that are British and American, all of the mixture, like all of these different things that we would do in school. And then come back home and I'd have to go to Bharatanatyam class. And I would go to, you know, Carnatic music class. And I had this whole different world. And it was just balancing these two things. It was my childhood. If we grew up in India, that wouldn't be the case. I feel that my eyes were opened further having to have both sets of cultures that I grew up in and appreciate both more. That's how I see it. And another thing I think growing up in Zambia is we were from a young age kind of exposed to people that are not privileged, so underprivileged. And it was something that was really shown to us at a young age through community service and school, going to all these orphanages. And I think that was such a natural thing that we did, that, yeah, we came from such a privileged family. Also exposed to people didn't have everything that you did. And you grew up in this bubble. I respected my parents more where they would kind of tell us, do you really need another birthday party? Can we just go to an orphanage and this will be your birthday? Now looking back, I'm grateful that they pushed that on us. if I didn't grow up in Zambia, I don't know if I would be, I feel like I would have grown up in a little bubble of my little life and I would have never seen the other side of how people truly live. Zambia really gave me a unique experience and I'm really grateful for all of it.
Did you ever feel a disconnect with your parents growing up? You know, maybe cultural differences, you know, any kind of friction that might have added some stress to your relationship with your parents? Because I'm assuming, you know, their experience and how they grew up was very different from us. We've talked about kind of balancing these two different cultures and values and all of that. I'm assuming naturally there's going to be certain moments or instances where those two worldviews kind of clash against each other. And obviously as a child, you probably don't have that much power to do anything about it. But I'm just curious to know, did you feel those any kind of differences in your outlook of the world and your parents' outlook of the world?
Bharath, that's a good question, because I always say this, and I think people that know me know that I say this. Being the oldest child, I just felt that I just went with the flow. I don't think I ever pushed back a lot to my parents because I didn't want to cause any kind of friction or tension at home. I just somehow took that backseat to just being like, okay, whatever, you guys have this viewpoint, that's okay with me. I'll allow you to have it while I'll maybe secretly have another viewpoint.
Do you recall any of those kinds of instances when, you know, you kind of decided to just let something go, even though you could have picked that fight, but you didn't?
Yeah, I think that it might be a little bit petty now, you know, looking back, petty or more, I would say teenage rebellion kind of phase where they wouldn't want me to wear certain clothes. And I could see this with people that even grew up in the US or grew up in India or wherever. Mm. I don't think it's necessarily cultural, but I think it was more, they kind of expected me to dress how they wanted me to dress. And I just didn't feel that was okay. I felt that I wanted to express myself the way I dressed. And here I was thinking, man, if I wore something that was shorter, you were embarrassed. Me being a teenager, and now would I wear something like that? Questionable. But at that point, it was how I wanted to fit in. And I was getting bullied for the way I was dressing. And, you know, it really affected me that, oh, people are not accepting me. And here I am pleasing my parents and wearing things that they want me to wear. But I didn't push back. It might be really silly. And I think that was one of the biggest fights I would have with my parents. But otherwise, I think my parents were pretty open-minded for the most part. I think I was really lucky. I was able to voice my opinions on a lot of things and have healthy discussions with my parents from a young age. Our family openly talked about a lot of things. So it really helped me to navigate through my thoughts. But one more thing that was really difficult, and I think my siblings did a better job at pushing back after I left home, was, you know, my parents had this thing of science is the best and science is the most important thing that you need to study. I didn't have the courage to be like, guys, but science is not that interesting to me. Science is something I don't want to do, but I never said it just because I was able to kind of do it. You know, you can do, I think, I'm a believer that if you put your mind to do, you want to do something, you can do it. Anybody can pick up something, really study hard and be able to do it. Maybe not be so successful if it naturally came to you, but you can still be successful. That's how I kind of viewed my whole educational experience. They really pushed, you know, the importance of education and science.
Right.
I think a lot of Indian parents do that. You know, either be a doctor, be a lawyer. We've all heard this, you know, phrase that everybody says, be an engineer,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't know how to break out of it and say, nope, I don't want to do it. I think that was something I wish I opened up and I just didn't. And only later after I'd finished my educational experience did I even talk about it. I think that was one of the biggest frictions I had. Other things were more, you know, where they would be like, let's go to a puja. But again, my parents never expected me to sit through a puja. So I appreciate that they understood as a child, it didn't matter to me.
Sorry to interrupt, but for context for our non-Indian listeners, pujas are essentially it's just another word for prayers.
Yeah.
Right. So any kind of Hindu prayers as kids, we would kind of have to go. We are from somewhat religious and traditional families.
Yeah.
And I would say the Tamil Indian society is fairly traditional. And so we would, as kids growing up, we would be at a lot of pujas and obviously since we grew up together, we'd be at the same pujas together and hang out together.
Yep, and that was my way of just saying, okay, I'm going to socialize. Mm. But the final thing to this whole thing, you know, you asked me this, and I really thought about it, is that mentality to want to please people. Mm. I just couldn't understand why it would matter what classes I took that auntie would not be okay with. And I think
interesting, yeah.
That was just, or you, why would you be embarrassed that I am not doing higher level math? Or yeah. I'm not, you know, just that, I don't know if my parents openly said it, but it's kind of like, oh, but these other kids are also, you know, your age and your peers and same background, they're doing it. And I never pushed back, yeah. But I used to be like, why do I care? You know, we're all unique individuals. I don't really need to be like that other girl or other boy that are part of my community and do the same thing. So something that I'm trying to break out of is trying to please the community that we are a part of and kind of do what is best for you.
That's a really good point, because that's one of those things that I think even to this day, it's a struggle, because us and our parents have different perspectives on the value of community and society, or not just the value, but the role of community and society.
Right.
We think we should have a lot more autonomy on the kind of decision we want to make. Mm-hmm. And it's none of other people's business, a lot of decisions that we should and can make. Whereas our parents come from this kind of generation and society where, yeah, you know what? It's kind of important what other people think. Not kind of important.
Very important.
It's very important what other people think. You're right. That's something that even I struggled with my family too.
Yeah. I want to know, Barth, what was some of the disconnects that you had growing up?
I honestly got the sense from a young age that I had a different set of values than my parents. And I felt that there were some things that I was very much okay with, but I knew that my parents wouldn't be okay with. And as a kid, you know, you only have so much power and say on how you want to live your life.
Yep.
But it wasn't really a huge problem. I didn't care as strongly for or against as my parents would. It's also understandable. This is something that doesn't just happen with immigrant families, right? I think it happens with every family. There's a bit of a generation gap between the parents and the kids. There's a difference of perspective between the parents and the kids. This just happened to be that a lot of those differences mm-hmm. happen to be around cultural values and social values. So, for example, my whole childhood was this weird juxtaposition of going to different prayers, mm-hmm. different Hindu, like Tamil prayers as a kid. And forgive me, our non-Indian Tamil listeners, but things like Ayyappan Pujas and Shivaratris, like all these things that happen like well into yeah. the night, or kind of almost like festival type moods, but very ritualistic and very prayer based. I'd go to those things, and then the next day I would go into school and I would have Bible study, right? So in the
That's
Zambian
schools.
That's
confusing as hell.
Yeah. And in the Zambian schools I went to, that was just a normal thing. Every Wednesday we would, in you know, one of the early periods in the morning, we'd have a Bible study. Knowing how much my parents were trying to hold on to Indian culture and Hindu culture, that kind of was a weird thing to live around as a child, because I was very comfortable sitting in a church with my friends. I was also obviously very comfortable being Indian and going to a temple and doing all these prayers and participating in all of that. So I think there are certain things that I was very much okay with. I think my parents maybe looked at it more as making a concession in order to, like this whole Bible study thing was probably a concession so that yeah. I can get a better education at a decent school. So it is hard for immigrant parents, because you don't want to hold on to what you at least perceive as what your culture is and what your values are. I won't lie. This is one of those things where me and my parents still fight today. Mm-hmm. And it's very normal. And, you know, we just try to find a way to have healthier fights around these issues, because my worldview isn't going to change based on an argument with them. And I recognize that their worldview isn't going to change based on an argument with me. And that honestly, I think, was the case even from my childhood. I always felt like I was playing for two different teams.
Even though probably you didn't feel that you related to one more than the other.
I related to both equally, I think. Because I have a very strong Zambian pride.
Right.
Indian, that's just my passport. So for me, I don't go to Zambia and say, oh, those are Zambians. Like, oh, we are Zambian.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of how I think about it. Whereas I do recognize that for our parents' generation, those kind of first generation Indian immigrants in Africa in general, obviously associate themselves stronger with being Indian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas for us, it's like, no, we have to find a way to compartmentalize when those two kind of sets of values and cultures clash.
Yep.
And we have to find a way to balance those two.
It's kind of like when somebody asks us, right? Like, where are you from? Usually my answer, I'm sure yours is, oh, I'm from Zambia.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you want to know further, originally my parents are from India.
Yeah.
And that's how, you know,
we... Even when someone's like, oh, are you Indian? I'm just like, no, actually I'm Zambian.
Yep.
My parents are Indian.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I'm an Indian citizen, but I'm Zambian.
Yeah, because I think we relate so much to... Because we grew up in Zambia.
It's that thing where, like, you have, like, petty fights to hold on to that identity. Like, right. I am Zambian. You know, stop calling me Indian. That kind of vibe. It's like, that's a part of me, but don't automatically associate me with that. Because I am Indian, but that's only part of my identity.
Right.
You know, the whole prayer thing is just one example. The other example that's kind of manifested over the years is this thing of picking a partner, right? As a kid, most of my classmates were Zambian,
mm-hmm.
right? Most of the people in my friend group were Zambian. And so naturally, as a kid, you have crushes on people, and all of them tended to be Zambian. And in my mind, I didn't find that weird. It was just the circumstances that kind of created that setting. But I never once felt guilty about it growing up. That's the thing, you as a child kind of balancing between these two cultures and values, at some times you kind of tend to compartmentalize.
Right.
Right. And so for me, if I was living in my own bubble, it doesn't matter to me whether I am with a Zambian woman or an Indian woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if she's beautiful, like, I'm going to be attracted to her. It was also that weird thing, as much as I didn't feel guilt about it, I was still aware that in the future, if this was to happen, it's going to be a difficult battle because social pulls and social issues that need to be rectified, or at least like social challenges that needed to be overcome. Those are just a couple of examples of, I don't know, I was constantly caught in the middle of. Now, again, as a child, you kind of don't make certain decisions.
Right.
Like you said, you pick certain battles because you don't want to fight with your parents, or you pick certain battles because maybe that's just not the appropriate time to pick those battles. I think we do need to acknowledge that our Indian communities and societies are, one, very privileged because they at least are able to afford to leave India and leave a particular setting.
We're living that expat life, right?
Yeah, it is an expatriate life,
yeah.
Right? But also, two, we have a lot of social stereotypes and social prejudices that, honestly, we bring with us whenever we move to a new place.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't allow ourselves to correct it as much as we ought to. As a kid, for me, I didn't really think of those prejudices weren't automatically translated to me, right? Some of them were.
Yeah.
Some of them are learned prejudices and learned stereotypes that we need to be conscious of and unlearn. As a kid, you almost get a fresh slate. And so when you see your parents or other people in society like behave a certain way, like you kind of feel like, wait, that's not my outlook of the world, but mm-hmm. this is still my society. This is still the people I associate with. This is still family. And the same thing in the Zambian side too, people would make kind of weird remarks about Indians or weird remarks about foreigners. And like, you see where that comes from. You understand it. The stereotype. And those communities and societies need to unlearn that too. That was kind of, it wasn't just a clash with my parents in terms of values. I think a clash more with societies that were kind of caught in between. So that was kind of my experience with trying to bridge the disconnect between the two, at least acknowledge the disconnect between the two groups.
No, I agree, Barth. I think that is a good point that you make, because the bridging the two is something I also didn't think about, you know, but we did it, right? Like, I didn't think that people that worked in my house were lower in any way. I think they just came and they did a job.
Yep.
And it's kind of like doing a job anywhere. We had the same kind of roles that Indians also did in India, or people in America did. So I think as kids, it's just easy for us to not differentiate the two worlds. I didn't until when I left. And then you notice how people are interacting with Zambians, or I noticed it more, that people are not on the same level. So,
and I noticed it more in myself too. Like, I don't want to lie and say that,
right,
you know, because we were the next generation, we didn't have these stereotypes. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I look back on and what was okay with me as a teenager, when I did have the voice to speak up against my parents or against like our whole society, I chose not to because in my mind I felt like that was okay. But then now that we've come out and we know better and we've learned better, we start to think about some of those stereotypes and some of those behavior that, you know, really wasn't okay.
Right.
And I don't think I've unlearned everything now, too. There's a lot of it that I need to catch myself and be like, wait, why am I treating that person differently?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of learned behavior in our societies that, you know, we have the privilege of at least having moved out of it to be able to look at it with a bit more of an objective lens. But it's difficult to do.
So reverting back to our childhood, Bharat, how did you balance this set of different values that you had?
Honestly, I think it was a lot easier for me. You know, as I mentioned, I went to Zambian schools. I had Zambian friends. I had two separate worlds, and they didn't really ever collide until high school and after high school. For me, it was fairly easy. I would be who I was in school, and at home, I would be who I was at home. And it didn't feel like I was being fake with each of those identities. It was easier for me to compartmentalize those two and not really think about those things that would kind of clash with each other, those values or those kind of practices that would clash with each other. I didn't really need to think about any of that until after high school. So for me, it was very easy. Like whatever I did at school was at school. As long as I didn't get into trouble with like teachers and whatnot,
right.
It was fine. Whatever I discussed with my friends, whatever we do with my friends, like that would never really come back home for me. And I could be my whole Zambian self in school. At home, I could be my whole Indian self. I think in that way, it was a really healthy kind of dynamic.
Yep.
Because it allowed me to be both. It allowed me to thrive in both and be happy in both. And I know your experience was very different.
I'm just looking at, yeah, I know. Because I was just thinking, you lucky, expletive. Because that was not my experience at all. Oh my gosh. I went to a school where half my friends that were from my house bubble were also my classmates. Oh boy, that was tough, man, because I just felt like I couldn't do whatever the hell I wanted to at school, and somehow my parents would never hear about it. They are going to hear about it. Mm-hmm. And I hated that because every time my phone rang, my heart would like beat because it would be one auntie calling my mom being like, oh, did you know the physics results are out today? Oh, and I'm like, can I just get a weekend off, bro? Because I don't want to talk about my grades this weekend. I wanted to chill out and maybe we'll talk about it on Monday when I had time to process it. It's just, I never was able to remove myself enmeshed life I was leading. It was so mixed up where I had all my Indian friends that were part of my community were also in my school. So I didn't have that way of breaking the two. Mm. Yeah, I think in terms of experiences, I was able to, right? I was able to have fun with my friends, my Zambian friends, my friends that were not Zambian, my Indian friends, and all that was fine. But I had this thing where my whole community that was outside of school were also in my school. Yeah. And it was tough. As a teenager, it is traumatizing. Everything you did will come back home. Having a boyfriend that is now my husband, people will hear about it even before I was ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I would have Indian teachers that were also part of my community.
Mm.
So, you know, that's another ball game.
That's not great.
No. Yeah, I think that's why somehow when I look back in my high school experience, it was a little traumatizing.
Yeah, because you don't have the space to kind of figure yourself out, which entails making mistakes as a teenager, right? And if those mistakes are always going to have the consequence of coming back to your parents, it's just not a way for you to, it's not a healthy way for you to grow into yourself.
Yeah, and I think maybe people didn't do it on purpose to let that other person know or my mom know. You know,
I disagree with you.
I hope
it's not a thing of making that decision to be malicious on purpose. It's just something that's just so normalized in our society and in our culture for us to just pick up the phone and talk about someone else's kid.
Seriously.
After my daughter or son has come to me and told me something about it. It's just so weird.
Yeah.
But it does happen and it is very normalized. It's not, a lot of times it's not malicious. It's just normalized behavior that's never been caught out. That's been very okay.
Yeah, man. I felt like even though it was a city of 3 million people, I just felt like I was connected to everyone. Everybody knew my business. I wanted to be allowed to have my own little secrets.
Yeah.
And somehow I think coming here, that was one thing I think I disliked growing up. But coming here, I was like, wow, what a breath of fresh air. I am my own person and I'm making my own decisions. And I think I turned out to be okay. It was really stressful. I was always kind of on edge, especially towards the later part of my schooling, because my cohort was super small. You are stuck with people that are maybe very different from the friends you would choose now, because you're such a small little class, right? So you kind of want to like one another and want to be friends because that's all you have. When I came to the US, one interesting thing, people would be like, oh, our graduating class was 500 and 1,000. I'm like, well, my graduating class maybe was 30, maybe. I think it was 15 to 20. I don't even remember now. But it was such a small class. All of us knew one another that some of the people I obviously love and I'm still friends with, but you're also put in that position where you need to want to like everybody.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, you know, because you are different and you don't need to relate to everyone in your class.
You know, I've actually thought about this over the years. That's a really good point, because I think a lot of kids in this immigrant expatriate life, particularly in the smaller countries and towns, they tend to be kind of forced into particular social groups, whether you like it or not. I used to think my group was amazing. High school was like the 2-3 best years of my life, just in terms of, you know, the experiences, but also the people that kind of was in our class at that time. That whole experience of your class is only, what, 30 people?
Mm-hmm.
And like, these are the friends you're kind of stuck with. When it clicks, it's amazing. But I think we also know of people in, you know, either like a year younger or older than us in different kind of class groups.
Yep.
They also grew up with a particular class that they didn't really click with. So right. They had a lot of toxic relationships, friendships, and a lot of people that they were just ready to bid good riddance to once they graduated.
Yeah.
Right. And that can really impact your high school life. You know, one of the most like crucial years of you becoming an adult. That can be really tough. Unfortunately, we have friends who have traumatic experiences going through high school with their groups. And I think about it, you know, is that how our parents also feel? Because they are also forced into, this is the group of Indians that you are going to find in Lusaka.
Right.
This is the group of people that you have arrived into Lusaka with in 1998, 1999. Like, these are the people you have to interact with. You know, like, yeah, there's maybe a choice, but it's really difficult to. The draw to be with an Indian Tamil group is probably higher than the push to be away from toxic people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our parents kind of lucked out in some sense, because there's a lot of aunties and uncles in Zambia that are like family to us.
And who we love.
Who we care about. When something goes great, we are extremely happy. When something goes terrible, we are extremely sad. Like, it is our own family.
We lucked out, actually.
We lucked out. But there's still people in Zambia who, you know, that wouldn't probably jive with our parents given a perfect bubble, and wouldn't jive with us given the perfect bubble. But I think that's one of those decisions that every immigrant family has to make, whether it's the parents when they move to a new place, or whether it's the kids when they are in a school environment or in their own social circles. That's who you're stuck with.
Yeah.
Our childhood friends are people that are, for me, like 4 years older than me, 3 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Right. This was the folks in our Tamil society.
Who I feel like I'm still, and who I feel like I'm so connected to, because we had this unique experience together.
Right.
That I feel they're still my friends.
But that age difference just shows you how small the pool is.
Right.
We only have those friends to make friends with. We only have those friends who become like siblings to you, because you go through the same experiences because families are that close.
Like you and I.
Yeah.
You were 3 years nearly younger than I am. Yeah. We were friends growing up.
But like, you and Rahul were really close from a young age.
Yeah, since we were 12.
That's the thing. All these pujas and whatnot, we're always running into each other. All these cultural programs, we're always running into each other, like doing dances together, doing performances together, that kind of thing. But, you know, there is a darker side to it, because a lot of us don't have the choice to make some of these friendships that we otherwise would have been able to.
So, Barth, we talked about a lot of things in this episode and really brought back some really good experiences and not so much. What kind of impact do you think this childhood had on you since you left?
The first thing that came to mind when we put down this question was this weird dynamic I have with being Indian and being Zambian. This kind of showed itself in a weird hatred for being Indian in some ways. And
interesting.
A lot of stereotypes about Indians from India. A lot of it came with me when I came out for college. And I think that's where I really noticed it, is when I first came to the US, I mentioned this in one of the other episodes, is I found it really hard to make friends with Indians in college. Because I had all these stereotypes about Indians, whatever, being closed-minded, being privileged, whatever these stereotypes are. And it took me a long time to really unlearn a lot of those stereotypes. Anyone, like, you know me, you know my friend circle. A lot of my friends, I gravitate more towards folks either with some kind of international background or just straight up Africans. Because that's what I feel, or at least that's what I used to feel most connected to. It took me years to kind of get over some of these or unlearn some of these prejudices I had about Indians, whether it's Indians, American Indians, or it's Indians straight from India. The only group of Indians I felt very comfortable and connected to and didn't have these stereotypes were other Indians like us who grew up in Africa and then came out to the West. Mm-hmm. I don't know where exactly that came from. One of the hypotheses I have is I think it's scarring as a child when you are in two different kind of social groups and there is a weird power and class dynamic between those two groups. Indians in Zambia automatically are of a certain social class. It's whatever, whether middle class, upper middle class, whatever the definition is. Indians in Africa are immigrants, meaning they have a certain wealth bar that they kind of meet in order to be able to move to Africa. But at the same time, there's all these kind of weird race dynamics. You know, Indians automatically looked as lighter skin and the in-between. But the weird thing is, I think our Indian societies have so much prejudice when it comes to their perspective of Zambians. And that obviously manifests in how they treat people. And for me, it felt like you're not treating someone else. You're treating another group of people that I closely associate with as a Zambian Indian, right? And it's this weird anger or hatred or this, I don't know how to express it best, but it's difficult to see one community that you associate with strongly put down or have a detrimental impact on another community that you associate with strongly. One of the beautiful things, though, is those stereotypes and that kind of behavior and how it manifests, it kind of slowly fades away the more time people spend in Zambia, in that place, because they also start to associate that as home.
Yeah.
And they also start to associate those people, quote unquote, those people as our people. This is my community. Not just Zambians are our people. We are Zambians.
Right.
Right. And we see this in our parents. Mm-hmm. I think our parents over the years have had a stronger association with Zambia than maybe when we first moved. Yeah. Right. And our society as a whole, the folks that, and maybe, the, you know what, maybe this is where that perspective of Indians from India being a certain way kind of comes in. Is even in our societies, Indian societies in Zambia, the folks that have been there for more than 10 years behave a certain way with Zambian folk. The folks that have been there for generations behave very differently than even these groups of
they're
people that have been there for 10 years.
They're fully assimilated.
Yeah.
They're Zambian more than anything
else. That is their community. You would see Indians who would move to Zambia. You would know by how they behave. At least this is obviously a generalization. It takes a little bit of time to kind of treat someone with a certain level of respect. With all these prejudices that Indians, as folks who have never interacted with Black, Zambian, African folks, they come with a lot of those stereotypes.
Yeah.
And I think that was frustrating to me as a child, to be able to see that in people that like our community fully embraces as, hey, you're an immigrant that's come from India. Like, we are here for you. Mm-hmm. If you need anything, let us know. You are part of our community. But to see our own community kind of behave a certain way towards other Zambians, that was disheartening as a kid. Growing up, I think I internalized a lot of that. I internalized that into a kind of hatred towards Indian and hatred towards my Indian identity.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I recognize that. I try to unlearn a lot of that. And it's taken me a few years. And obviously, there's still a lot of work to do. But I think that's kind of been one of those things that has had a very strong impact on me since leaving Zambia.
Parth, you talking about all of this and you vocalizing and thinking through all of the points that you just made, to me shows that you are trying to unlearn a lot of it or trying to create new memories and new perspectives. And that's a big step, in my opinion.
It's been a journey of unlearning my own prejudices, but it's also balancing that with having the courage and confidence to challenge some of these privileges in our own communities. You can't be angry about it. You just have to be able to speak up when you see it in your own families or you see it in your own communities, and at least make your stance known. Besides this whole issue, I think there are a couple more things I just want to touch on that I think growing up in Zambia has really left an imprint on. The first thing is, it's taught me the importance of empathy. You know, being in these two kind of communities, you're forced to think about a certain thing from both their perspectives.
Right.
Right. And because you're forced to have to do that, I think you gain a better appreciation for nuance when it comes to whether it's political issues, social issues, whatever it is, understanding that, hey, there's probably more to the story. Or, hey, this is probably just one story. And there's a danger in just accepting that one story. You have to look at what different, who this issue impacts and what their different versions of the stories are. I think growing up in Zambia has really given me a better appreciation for that. The second thing too is that same mindset, it's allowed me to kind of look at my own life and what I want to establish for myself and my kids and the future generations. As much as growing up Indian outside of India, a lot of tradition is forced onto you. I think that upbringing allowed me to be able to pick and choose. It allowed me to be able to think about what is actually worth doing. Why are we doing certain things? What is the value behind doing certain things? And this may be more, I guess, maybe a lot of our Indian listeners may be appreciative of this, particularly our Hindu listeners, because a lot of Hinduism is about ritual and it's all the prayers and the language that most of us don't understand. It's all in Sanskrit, right? Or it's all in like old Tamil. A lot of that feels so performative sometimes, and it just makes me think, if there's emotion attached to it, if there's some kind of emotional value attached to that performative culture and tradition, yeah, let's keep it. Let's do that. If it gets to a point where I'm just doing it because my dad used to do it, or mm-hmm. I'm doing it because, not just that my dad used to do it, but he used to do it because his dad used to do it and he felt so strongly about it, but I don't feel so strongly about it, then I'm comfortable saying I don't want to do that. You know, there's no value for me in doing that. It's just given me that kind of a perspective on religion and tradition and culture, and allowing me to be more critical of, hey, maybe I can pick and choose. Maybe I can be more intentional about what culture I want to embrace for my own life.
Right. And I think, because that's a good point that you bring, and that's a lot of conversation and discussions I have with my friends where they did grow up in India and they have left and they're here or wherever they are, or even our friends that grew up with us in Zambia. And I think a lot of us now, we are more aware of what do we want and why are we doing it? And we're okay actually not following 100% what our parents did in terms of tradition. And I think the older we get, the society and the life that we've been handed, we're able to say, that's not going to work for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose what I want to do. And I love that.
And that is a privilege.
Yeah. Right?
And that is a privilege we have by being Indians outside of India
or right.
being in any diaspora. Yeah. How about you, Raksha? How does this childhood in Zambia, how does that impact how you've kind of lived your life since you moved out of Zambia? And how does that impact your perspective for the future?
I think I'm very lucky that I had the opportunity to grow up in Zambia as an Indian. Got such a well-rounded life. I left home 12 years ago at this point. You know, to be honest with you, Bharath, I really needed to go back and remember how my life was then. Because you kind of forget a little bit. And sometimes I was thinking to myself, is this the real narrative? Or is this what I remember? Or am I choosing to remember it a certain way? And I was questioning myself because it was a little fuzzy, you know. I only have happy memories. And that says a lot, I think. Growing up in Zambia was important because I was exposed to so many different cultures. And I think if I just grew up in India, that would have been tough. I would have been only exposed to different Indian cultures. But having, you know, international teachers, American teachers, British teachers, Zambian teachers, Indian teachers, that was, I think your teacher plays such an important role because I was exposed to so many other cultures through their eyes and through their viewpoint of the world. And that was exciting. Growing up in Zambia, going to an international school, we were able to participate in Model United Nations. We were able to do community service for the society that we live in. When I came here 12 years ago for college, I felt well ahead in the game. I felt, wow, my views are, I have such an open view of the world. And because I lived in Zambia, I was able to see other countries. And I kind of mentioned this before too in the beginning, because I felt this whole journey of growing up in Zambia for me is reflective as who I am. The person I am today is because I had this childhood, because I had this viewpoint of such a exposed, not only forced into the Indian, but also looking at the Zambian and Zambian culture. And I think you brought up a point about empathy between the two societies, but I kind of look at it a little different, where I was able to learn from the Zambian society, because I think kindness and being courteous is such an integral part of being Zambian. I feel that it's made me who I am. I'm very grateful as a person because that's the Zambian society. I then have this other perspective of Indian culture, of all the cultural things that I've been exposed to in terms of prayers, in terms of art forms and things like that, that are part of our Indian culture, that I was able to blend. And then now I'm here, a mixed bag growing up. And I would love to continue being like this. You know, I just feel this has given me such a beautiful mix of the person I am today.
Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you were able to take something away from this conversation. Please follow us on our Facebook and Instagram at Two Suitcases Pod. Again, that's at Two Suitcases Pod spelled out. Feel free to leave feedback, ask questions, or even suggest topics for future episodes. Look out for the next episode on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Thanks for unpacking with us. See you next time.